Blog Talk Radio.
Turn me up a little bit.
Yo, turn radio.
Haha. What you know about it? What you know about it? I said it. Hip-hop, the hip-hop, hip-hop, and you don't stop. I rock on, baby, bubba, to the boogie, baby, the boogie, to the boogie.
So, Dean, are you there?
Yes.
Can you hear
Hello,
me now?
Everyone. This is WTF, a special Saturday morning edition.
What's going on today, partner? I am so excited. You know, everybody, well, not just everybody, Jody says that I wake up like Mary Poppins, you know, like when we go to the Vola whatnot, and I just come bouncing out the room and meet Jody, and I'm just ready to go, and Jody's all grumpy Gus and everything. I can't help it. My husband says I'm bippity-boppity in the morning, so I always look forward to morning shows, so I'm always awake.
Great.
Yes, and this is the first Saturday of summer vacation. I just can't stress that enough.
That's the real reason why you're bippity-boppity.
No, I am always bippity-boppity. So, but like I said, but this is the first Saturday morning of summer vacation. My last day at work is Monday. Because teachers finish up on Monday. We have to stuff envelopes and send report cards home and crap like that. And then I am home. I've already made arrangements with the daycare to send the kid there, you know, maybe twice a week. So I'm set. You know, so I can do some writing while he's at daycare. Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Right, well,
yeah, that's what I'm going to do. I can't write with him at home.
Well, I guess you'll be productive during
I'm
your summer vacation.
Yes, I have to. I'm sorry. I'm excited. It's summertime.
Anyway, we have a great show for y'all this morning. Like I said, this is a special WTF Saturday morning edition. It's the children's book edition. We have some very good children's authors. I know we always get people who want to ask us when we're going to have some children authors on the show, and people who have children, such as myself, we're always looking for a children's book because we always want our children to read. And if you have children who love to read, you're always looking for a book. So we're going to have some very interesting authors, and they're going to tell us about what they have going on. We actually have four this morning. Kenitra, do you want to go down the list?
Yes,
and
we have
tell
Evelyn
who we
Walker.
Have?
We have Evelyn Walker. We have, I think you say, I know it's Yara. I think it's Kalima. We have Cynthia Wilson, and then we have Vanessa Santiago, and I think that's German. I think that's how you say her last name, so, but I'm sure she'll correct me when she comes on the air. So we have all of them here. Awesome writers. So, I'm sorry.
Yes, should be very interesting because, like I said, we never have, this will be our first time with the authors of the youth. You know, I'm kind of excited about that because I want to hear about what's going on so I know what books to get myself. But we'll have them coming up a little bit later in the show. First, we're going to go to something that we like to call the spin cycle topic. So, KJ, spin the wheel.
Oh, my goodness. Looks like the board isn't awake. Come on. Really? Okay, cool. All right. Now, the spin cycle topics, of course, may or may not necessarily, well, they're not geared towards children's literature, obviously. But did you see where someone was posting about the teacher who made the really horrible comments about the pool party in McKinney? Did you see that, partner?
Yes, I did.
That was terrible. I didn't know she was a teacher. So, I kept wondering, how did it come out, or how did people find out she was a teacher? Because I know they were saying that, well, basically, let me just back up so people know, she made some really derogatory comments talking about how the people who were doing all of this stuff, the children, were basically illiterate and uneducated, and that, you know, what do you expect, because their parents are just as uneducated as they are. And, I mean, she made some pretty crazy comments. And I guess when I went back and read it, I could somewhat see where the teacher in her was coming from, because of the fact that she kept stressing about, the uneducated part and what do you expect, and the parents probably don't have the education level either. But I'm happy to hear that she resigned. But they said she apologized, so I guess that's supposed to make it better. But as an educator, I'm very happy she resigned, you know?
Did she resign or was she fired?
I think they said, well, you know, it might have been a little bit of both. Sometimes in education, there's a way that they can, they'll fire you, but they'll tell you for you to resign as far as trying to save face. So it could have been a little bit of both, to be quite honest. But her comments were very inflammatory. She was like, you know, this makes me angry. This officer should not have to resign. I'm going to just go ahead and say it. The blacks are the ones causing the problems and this racial tension. And that's in quotation marks. I guess that's what happens when you flunk out of school and have no education. I'm sure their parents are just as guilty for not knowing what their kids were doing or knew it and didn't care. I'm almost to the point of wanting them all segregated on one side of town so they can hurt each other and leave the innocent people alone. Maybe the 50s and 60s were really on to something. Now, let the bashing of my true and honest opinion begin. Go. I'm no racist. I'm sick of them causing trouble. It was a gated community.
Yeah. Okay. I saw this in the group. I saw all of the comments. It sparked a very heated debate. And I'm going to take an unpopular stance on this. And my stance is pretty much consistent. Every time we have something like this, I'm always consistent. Everybody knows that I am is pro-black and as stand up for my people as anybody can be. But I'm also free speech. It's like, I'm so sick and tired when everybody always calls for somebody's job when they make comments about how they truly feel. Like, what do y'all want? Y'all want people to just lie to y'all all the time. If someone feels that way, I'd rather know it than not
right. Know it.
You know what I'm saying? I just
yeah.
would. I'd rather know how you feel than you putting on some air, some front. And I really don't believe that this... See, here's the thing I'm struggling with, though. Because she's a teacher, she's an educator.
Right.
That's the problem
issue.
that I'm struggling with. I mean,
right.
but does she bring that to her class? Or is
but
that
here's
just
my
something...
thing. I think it would be
hard not to. Let me finish. But I don't know. Maybe she doesn't bring that to her class. Maybe she keeps it professional, but that's her personal feeling. And then, too, there's another thing.
Strong feelings.
Well, but then there's another thing that I'm thinking about, too. Maybe she feels that way because she's a teacher. See, people never want to take this stance, or they never want to look beyond some comments. They just look at it and say, she's racist. But maybe she took that stance because she's a teacher. Because I remember growing up, and I'm going to tell you why I say that. Because people say, What do you mean? Let me finish.
No, I get you.
I'm going to tell you why I say that. Because I remember growing up and going to school, being around certain individuals who were not interested in learning. They were as disruptive, as rude, as whatever you want to call it, as they can be. And they just, you know, and it was plenty of them. And guess what skin tone they happened to be? They were my skin tone, my color, my folks, my people. And so maybe this lady, as a teacher, maybe that's all she sees.
Right.
Or maybe not all she sees, but maybe that's the majority of what she sees. So when you see what what I'm trying to get at, when you see something over and over and over again, you start to develop an opinion about stuff.
Right. That
so maybe
makes
she's
sense.
Just not, maybe she's not around positive black folks all the time. Maybe she's not around children who want to come to school and learn who happen to be African-American all the time. That's not to say that there aren't any in her school. I'm just saying maybe that's what her experience is. And maybe that's how she gets her thoughts. Now, should she have gone on social media or whatever and said it? I doubt it because, I mean, in this climate with the way everything has to be PC, of course she's going to, you know, people are going to call for her job. But my thing is, stop trying to fire everybody over their own opinions. Unless there's some cases where she's been discriminatory in her classroom, and I don't know that there are because I haven't seen any people come say, oh, this teacher was racist and she did this to my child. I haven't seen people come out of the woodwork with that. Usually that's the case. But I haven't seen anybody come out and say that about this teacher. So maybe this was her personal opinion.
Well, and that's what she said.
And she just got fed up.
Right. And that's what she said. This is my pure, you know, honest, personal opinion. That's exactly what she said.
And there's nothing to me. Everybody's not going to think the same way. Everybody's not going to have the same attitude towards things.
Right.
We talked about this officer and what he did on our show, and I said, if that would have been my daughter, he'd been a dead duck, period. You know?
Right. Mm-hmm.
I don't care about all that other stuff. You're not going to put your knees in the back of my daughter and toss my daughter to the ground like they're in a bikini. You know, I don't care about it being a gated community and, you know, and it was predominantly white. And I don't care about all of that. To me, I whatever. But that's my opinion. So, should I, you know, lose my job or whatever because I have an opinion? We have different opinions. She's coming from a different place.
That's true. I guess my thing is that as educators, we have been warned about the dangers of social media to our jobs. And so, you know, that's why I said I was surprised when I found out she was an educator. You know, if you saw my comments in the group, I was like, wait a minute, she's a teacher? I didn't know she was a teacher. I didn't see she was a teacher. Where'd that come from? And that's why, because, like I said, here in Charlotte, we had teachers get fired over comments that they posted on Facebook maybe about, you know, 9 years ago, where a teacher got on Facebook and said that she doesn't teach kindergarten. She teaches chitlins and hog maws and collard greens.
Wow.
That was a comment. Oh, yes, because she taught at one of the lower socioeconomic schools here in Charlotte. And she got on Facebook and she made those comments. She and about five other teachers just kind of had like a pile-on conversation, you know, using negative euphemisms about their students. And all five of them lost their jobs. So, you know, teachers have been warned, educators have been warned, administrators have been warned about the pitfalls of social media. And be, you know, it may not be right, but you have to watch what you say on social media. Kind of like what you always say about people who are public figures. And when you're a public figure, you have to watch the image that you put out there. Same thing with being a teacher. We are public figures. I mean, it's just been within the last 20 years that a teacher can be unmarried and pregnant and still teaching amongst her pupils. Because there was a time when if you were unmarried and pregnant and a teacher, you lost your job. Because what message did you send forth to your students? So that's why I was saying I was surprised that she was a teacher saying those types of things on social media.
I get the fact because she comes from a different perspective. She's going to have a different viewpoint of the police. In her mind, the police are the good guys because that is her experience with the police. You know what I mean? I mean, she's not seeing her folks being mistreated by the police. She's always saying, I mean, some of this is the media's fault, too. And I know people in the media hate to be blamed. They say, oh, y'all always blaming the media. A lot of this has to do with the media. Because when you turn on the news, most of the time, the people that you see being handcuffed and being harassed by the police are minorities. And trust me, minorities aren't the only ones being arrested.
Right.
But a lot of this has to do, it's a conditioning. It's social conditioning, in my opinion. And so the average person who doesn't have issues with the police because the police aren't harassing them, they think that anytime the police, when they see the police doing something like that to somebody, then that person must have done something wrong. So in her mind, she's rationalizing that this man, this grown-ass man, this grown man threw a child down in a bikini that was at a pool party, tossed them to the ground, put their knee in her back, and was justified in doing it because obviously she must have done something wrong. But if she had taken the color out, suppose that was a black cop and threw a white child down like that. I wonder would she have had the same narrative. I seriously doubt it. She would have probably been appalled. But losing her job, I get the whole thing about educators. I get that part, and maybe that's why. I mean, you know, you can't go on and say what she said, but I don't agree with the whole losing the job part because at the end of the day, people have opinions, and everybody's opinions, like I said, are not going to jive with one another. You know, this is a melting pot. This is, you know, this is the land, quote unquote, of the free.
But not for educators.
Yeah, obviously.
No,
not
seriously,
for a lot of people.
Not for educators.
Not for a lot of people.
We've had somebody, a
billionaire who lost his team because of stuff he said in private on a phone call. So it's not just educators. It's everybody.
Right, but educators tend to get held to a higher standard anyway. That's just like we are not allowed to, we don't discuss religion in class for obvious reasons because here's the thing you have to understand. Teachers have this uncanny ability to sway and to, shape and sway at the same time. That's why it came out, to sway and shape young minds. And so that's the reason why there are so many restrictions. Oh, my God, I've been out of the classroom for how long and I can't talk already? But at any rate, that's why there are so many restrictions on the things that we can and can't discuss, like religion, big no-no. Don't you dare get into a conversation about religion in that classroom. Politics. When the elections were going on, we actually received notices from HR showing us the part of our contracts that states that we cannot support one political venue over another. We are not supposed to wear, like how a lot of people had on the Obama shirts or, you know, Romney shirts, whomever they, you know, wanted to vote for or whatnot. We don't wear things like that. We cannot wear anything that shows our political stance or our religious stance on anything. And I get it. I get that, which is why I said she should have been very careful in saying the types of things that she said on such a sensitive subject. So that's why I'm saying to you, as far as her losing her job, I'm not fazed by it because too much is already known by educators. We already have been warned about the different things that we can and cannot say and do. And she did it. So she lost her job.
Okay. All right.
All right. So now you were
still
talking about, huh?
But I said I still don't agree, but I get it.
Yeah.
My topic, my spin cycle topic is what's going around right now that is like really sparking debate. The NAACP Prez Rachel, what is it, Dolezal?
I don't know how you say that name.
Or
Dolezal. Mm-hmm. Yeah,
let's say Rachel's, Rachel D. How about
that? Yeah, let's just say Rachel. Here we go.
It's been reported that she is not really an African-American woman. That she was, she is in fact a white woman who was parading around. I feel like this is like the female version of the movie. Remember the movie Soul Man?
Yes.
That came out, I think it was like in the late 80s or something. It was like C. Thomas Howell, where he was, he wanted to get a scholarship to Harvard. And so he took like these tanning pills and stuff and to darken his skin. And he turned himself into an African-American so he could get the scholarship to go to Harvard. And he was actually a black guy. I don't know why, but this is funny to me. It's similar to that. She actually turned herself into an African-American woman. I mean, when you see
how?
The pics.
How did she do
when
it?
When you see the pics, she could definitely pass for a mixed or a biracial woman, you know?
Mm-hmm.
When you see her original pic, she definitely, you know, she was definitely a white woman. And her parents outed her, which is interesting to me. This is like just starting a crazy debate on that, like, she should lose her position. She, you know, I guess here's my take. And they said she's been a great president. I mean, you know, she's done a lot. And should she lose her position in the NAACP? Because she's not truly what she represented herself to be. My thought is, even though she's, you know, done great things while she was there, I feel like she needs to be gone. And here's why. Because she misrepresented herself.
Mm-hmm.
And I use the analogy of convicted felons. I personally seen this myself with friends and acquaintances, and also when I was in a position when I was doing hiring and stuff. I've seen this myself. A lot of times you have a convicted felon who can't get a job, and he fills out that application, he or she fills out that application, and invariably they get to the part where it says, have you ever been convicted of a felony? And here's, you know, and most of the time when they mark yes, they're not getting that job. And so some of them, they're fed up, you know, they can't get a job, and they, you know, and eventually they just lie and say, you know, no. And let's say they get the job before the background check comes back or whatever. They get the job, and they perform the job admirably. They go above and beyond, you know, because, hey, you know, they try to impress. And they become a valuable employee. But then that background check or something comes back, they're gone just like that. Company will terminate them. Doesn't matter how valuable they've made themselves to the company, how good of an employee they've been, how much overtime they put in, how much extra stuff they put in. It doesn't matter. They just get rid of them just like that. And the reason why they always say they get rid of them is because you misrepresented yourself.
Gotcha.
It happens time and time again.
Oh, I agree.
This woman misrepresented herself. She's not an African-American woman. Period. It doesn't matter how you found out, because people are like, well, why did her parents out her to begin with? It doesn't matter.
Yeah, I want to know that.
I guess my thing is, maybe they got tired of her turning her back on her heritage. You
maybe
know what I mean?
She was too over the top. Right on, Mom.
Yeah, I'm just saying. It's like, okay, if would you be proud of your daughter or son if they turned their back on their heritage? Like, if an African-American was trying to pass as white, was, you know, and they got a job because of it. I don't know what job you could get because...
I mean, but that's been happening for years. That's been happening forever. for centuries,
yeah, I know,
you
but,
know, you've had
but
that
what I'm
happen.
Saying is there was somebody who said that she should lose her job because, and they said this in the group, that what if she was African-American and she could pass as white and she got a job because she was white? And I was sitting there thinking to myself, well, what job is there? There's no all-white society, I mean, you know, entity now, except the KKK, that you're supposed to be all-white in. You know what I mean? Like, that's supposed
right.
to be elite. You know, so
well,
I don't know
but
if you,
if
can
you take it from
opposite.
That sense. Right, but if you take it from that sense, if you see what Kay Bry was talking in the group, and Kay was talking about, you know, she was talking about how where she lives in Mississippi, she lives in a segregated area that a lot of Mississippi is still segregated. You know, this is a black town, this is a white town, you know, like that.
Right.
So, you know, so she talks about that. So I guess in a situation like that, people probably do still try to pass so they can get in and, you know. I've actually seen movies like that where you had a really, really light-skinned man. It was a Lifetime movie, matter of fact, you know, your favorite network. And he was light enough to where he passed and bought a house in a white neighborhood. And then they didn't realize the family was black until he moved his wife in there, who was, I think that was Lynn Whitfield was the wife, and then their two boys who were very much, you know, African-American. But at any rate, wonderful topic. And Yara said that she has some things she wants to say on that when she comes on the air. So my last topic before, yep, she just sent me a message. So I'm not going to tell you what she said. I'm going to let her say it when we bring her on. But
okay.
My last thing is really quick. At least it's going to be quick for me. But you might go off on it. Do you know there is a scientific reason why men can't multitask?
Really, men multitask just as well as women.
No. Let me read just this little part to you, because this little part just says it all. You often hear men saying they prefer to do one thing at a time, while women often do and expect multitask. Some men can be so dedicated to one thing that they don't even notice their phone ringing. Women don't understand this.
Call
if they can do three. If they can do three things at once, why can't men? The male brain. Stop.
Whatever.
The male brain is configured for a single task at a time due to fewer. Don't you do it, Jody. Due to fewer connecting fibers between the right and the left hemisphere. Women's brains. My article, women's brains have three times as many connecting fibers between the right and left hemispheres. In fact, if you read a man's brain scan while he is reading, you will find him practically deaf to his surroundings.
This article is such BS on so many levels, it is ridiculous. It is totally ridiculous.
Whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Men cannot multitask, and we have science to prove it. I think
you don't have science. You don't have science to prove it. It's the same scientists that claim Pluto isn't a planet. When I was growing up, it was a planet. They changed their mind over and over and over again. So,
it's okay.
They might
it's
say
okay,
that today.
Jody.
They might say that today, and tomorrow it'll be totally different. And if
it's
men
couldn't
multitask,
Jody.
How did we put a man on the moon? I'm pretty sure those astronauts were multitasking on their way
to
the moon.
I'm pretty sure there was a woman behind them running the show.
Right. I'm
so,
pretty sure there wasn't.
Whatever. I'm pretty sure
that's
probably
the reason
why
you
females
seen,
are mostly
if you,
secretaries.
And if you've ever seen a woman multitask, she doesn't do it very well. Why? Because most women, for some reason, always have to get in the car and get on their cell phones and text. And you know what happens when they do that? They usually get in car accidents. So they're not that great at multitasking.
Whatever. That's anybody. No one should be texting
right.
and driving.
But
so that's a poor,
statistics
example.
Statistics show women do it more than men, if you want to break out scientists.
Whatever.
Anyway.
Whatever. Okay. So we will be right back now that Jody has been completely demolished.
Ruined.
Yes. We'll be right back after this with our guests, Evelyn, Yara, Cynthia, and Vanessa.
Coming
looking
up.
For a good read? Try reading Sugarland by our own Jody Sanders. Meet Sugar, a mysterious and vengeful woman originally from a small town in Georgia, as she returns to the Carolinas to deal with her shameful and disturbing history with a group of three very flawed friends. Also by our own Kenitra Jordan, Eternal Bloom. Raised to honor her vows, Ayanna Adams soon learns the truth about her husband and still has to try to find a way to get herself and her children out alive. You can pick up these two titles at Amazon.com for your Kindle or Barnes & Noble for your Nook. Thank you for your support. WTF is giving back to the community with our Back to School Drive. We are collecting paper, pencil, notebooks, anything that will help a young person to succeed in school. For more information on how you can donate supplies and where you can send them to, please contact our very own Kim Jones. You can inbox her on Facebook. Thank you so much, and help us give back to the community.
All right, Jordy. You there?
Really? Why are you talking like that?
I already explained that to me, to you.
Okay.
I mean, you know, I'm just excited. I mean, it's summer vacation. It's kind of like, I kind of feel like Smokey and Friday. You know, it's Friday. You ain't got no job. You ain't got nothing to do. I mean, I got a job, but you get my point. You get my point.
Okay. I believe we have some guests at the door. Welcome, ladies.
Hi, hi.
Thank
now,
you.
Let's do this. Let's introduce you one at a time. Evelyn, where are you?
I'm awesome. How are you, Kenitra and Jody?
Good, good.
Okay, Yara.
Hey, hey. It's Yara K in the building. How are you?
Good, good.
Cynthia.
Hi, Cynthia here. I'm on the south side of Chicago.
Oh, cool.
All right, now,
Chi-Town. Yes.
Yeah.
And Vanessa.
Hey, good morning, everybody. Vanessa checking in from the Poconos.
You're the Poconos?
Poconos.
Yes, ma'am.
Wow, that is awesome. Cool. So let's get this party started. You always hear about... you know, a summer vacation, and you always hear about the importance of children reading during the summer. And as an educator, I can definitely say it is important that your child read during the summer because of the fact that otherwise you'll find that they will regress in their education a lot from the summer months to when they come back to school in August. So what kind of made all of you, and you could just take turns answering one at a time, what kind of made you guys decide that you wanted to write towards children?
Okay, this is Evelyn. You guys hear me?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I you know, I didn't want to get too loud.
You're fine.
Tanisha said go in a quiet place, so I went in the closet and closed the door.
Okay.
Oh, my God. Anyway, But anyway, I am a preschool teacher by trade, and what happened with me getting involved in writing, well, let me just go back. I digress. It started when I was a child. I always babysat kids from a young age. And then I wrote poetry, I wrote short stories and essays, I mean, songs. I was very much into anything that had to do with writing work or things. So as I got older and became an adult, I wanted to impact children's lives, but I wasn't really sure how I wanted to do that. So I went to school and got my education in early childhood, and then I started working at the preschool. And as I worked at the preschool, the kids were coming in every day, like, terrified, you know, about different things that related to their lives, like being left at school and, you know, being fearful and different things like that. And I saw that that was becoming a huge issue with my babies. And so one day we were in the classroom, and I had my three-year-old and the four-year-old classroom. Some of the threes were asleep. Some of the fours were asleep. Majority were awake. And so we've been working on different spiders and insects and stuff for the week. And I was like, well, go to the table, and we'll just do art. We can do some art, bug art. And so that's how my story came to play. And I started writing based on the things that I know that the kids were afraid of. So, and not having self-esteem and different things like that. So that's how I started writing. It was never intentional. We were just doing art. And the kids were like, wow, Miss Evelyn, we like your bug. What is it? And I was like, it's a spider. And they were like, oh, okay. What kind of spider is it? I'm like, I don't know. It's a girl. You know, and then they wanted to name the spider, and then from that point it started to, you know, we started working together, collaborating to make it into a book. And now Fancy Girl is actually a book. So that's how I came about writing. And there was such a need for it in the classroom to help children overcome fears and anxieties that they face every day.
Cool.
Oh, okay. Okay. And what's the name of your book, Evelyn?
It's called Fancy Girl New School.
Okay.
Fancy Girl
New School. But she's Fancy Bug now, according to some of the kids, you know.
Okay.
Because they keep changing who she is. But she's a spider. She's a non-intimidating spider. She's a very cute girl, but, you know, kids will change her stuff around if you let them.
Okay.
They will.
Mm-hmm. Now, Yara, Kenitra said that you had something that you wanted to say about one of the topics, so we're going to give you your opportunity now.
I had something to say about the young woman who transformed herself into an African-American. It's pretty weird to me that was in such uproar about her becoming an African-American when Bruce Jenner has become a woman. I mean, I'm just saying, though. And to top it all off, she's transformed herself to be in the minority when the minority has not come to the point where they want to be in the majority. So it's like, we're not, as African Americans, there aren't too many people who are standing up for themselves and wanting to make change in their communities. We complain, yes, we do. But, you know, talk is cheap. And she's actually made a transformation and helped the situation rather than just got there and was like, oh, I'm on the top now, I'm the president, and that's it. You know, she did her part. So what's the big deal?
I asked, like I said, for me, the big deal is she misrepresented herself to get there. If she's already a minority by just being a woman.
That's just like people who lack their education, but they had money, so they get to a certain place because of their money. It's the same thing. Like, I don't really understand. Like, you know, she's done her part. Why are we so upset with her?
I think it's because she's the head of the NAACP, she didn't get to be the president of the NAACP. I mean, it's not like she changed her skin tone and became black and she was like the head of Coca-Cola. I mean, she was the head of the NAACP. It's a little bit different, I guess. That's why people are in such uproar. Me personally, I understand that she did a lot of good things while she was in that position. But she still misrepresented herself. It's like the analogy I gave with the convicted felons. There are plenty of people.
If she had remained her true self and still wanted to fight for
the rights
of African Americans, it would have been cool. Like, cause she remained her, her true self.
She could have. The NAACP was actually formed by both African Americans and Caucasians. So she could have remained a Caucasian woman and still got that presidency. You see what I'm saying? The NAACP wasn't just formed by African Americans. They were formed by African Americans and Caucasians, to be honest with you. So she didn't really have to misrepresent herself, if you see what I'm saying. She could have come in as a white woman. She was still a minority by being a woman.
Yeah, you're right. You're absolutely right. But I think that it may not have to do anything to do. Like, I don't know what her true stance is. Like, if her only reason for transforming herself was for that position, or if that's how she really felt. Like, she should have. Like, you know how some people say they're born in the wrong body.
Yeah,
maybe she really
thought
she was supposed to be African American. We don't really know. Like, it could be some psychological thing that's going on in her head, and it may not have just been because of the position.
I definitely see your point, and I don't think, because I don't think she changed her appearance just to get that position. That it had to be something in her that she had been doing for a while. You see what I'm saying? She couldn't have just all of a sudden said, "Hey, I'm getting ready to go get this position. Let me go see if I can turn myself black." Because it was like over a period of time that she changed her appearance.
That's just like Michael Jackson when he changed his skin color to being white.
Yeah, that's true.
I mean, hey. Okay, so now can I introduce why I am?
we should have brought you on the spin cycle topic. That's a good debate. But yeah, go ahead.
Okay, so I'm Yara Kalima. I'm from North New Jersey. I am a African American Muslim. And I have a 3-year-old daughter, and there's no books about African American Muslims. And the reason why I wrote Samara's Trip to the Masjid is not only because I wanted to show the importance of going to Jumu'ah, going to the Masjid, and making your prayers there. I wanted my daughter to be able to pick up a book with a character that looked like her. A lot of the depictions of Muslims in media are Arab Muslims. And even when, like, I'm doing a new children's book and I'm talking to the illustrator, I told her I want one of the characters to be a Muslim girl, and she sends me back a picture of an Arab Muslim, and I'm like, I'm black. Like, so that was one of my reasonings for writing this particular book and in this particular style, because I wanted to make sure that my daughter and other little girls who are like her can pick up a book with a character that looks like them, pretty much.
That's great. Let me ask you this, because I really don't know. And I'm glad you wrote this book, because I do want to find out about this. What is the biggest difference between an African-American Muslim and an Arab Muslim?
I mean, I really don't see that there's a big difference. It's just that there's a stereotype that you have to be from a different country or a different place to be Muslim. And a lot of times people ask me, where are you from? And I'm like, I'm from North New Jersey. No, like, what's your nationality? I'm American. I'm African-American. Like, you know, so they think that I'm from, like, a different country. They think I'm from Africa. They think I'm from, you know, some other place. When I'm American, I was born here. I converted to Islam later on in my life. So, you know, there's so many stigmatisms about African-Americans and Islam. You have, like, even when I first converted, a good companion, she's from Pakistan, and she was asking me, like, what nationality were you before you were Muslim, and I really didn't understand what she was saying, but later on I figured out that she was really asking me what religion I was. So in her mind, Islam is a nationality, because she's Pakistani. This is her culture, and this is not my culture. Like, I'm not from Pakistan. I'm not from, you know, a country where most people are Muslim. So she thought that Islam was a nationality, it was a, I don't know how else to explain what she thought, but yeah, so it's pretty ignorant that she would think that it's a nationality and not a religion, you know, and even when we see other cultures like Chinese people, there are Chinese Muslims, you know, there are Muslims from different countries, and it's so much ignorance about it, and that was one of the reasons why I wanted to write this book. And, you know, even in the illustrations where the people are at the masjid, there are not just African-American Muslims there, there are all types of Muslims. So I wanted to show the diversity in Islam, and a lot of people don't see that.
Gotcha.
And, your, and what was the name of your book again?
Samira's Trip to the Masjid.
Can you spell that first name?
S-A-M-I-R-A. Trip to the Masjid.
Trip to who?
Samira's Trip to the Masjid.
And for everybody listening, we will have the author's names and titles posted up in the group and on our fan page. So
yeah,
don't worry.
What I was doing.
You will have everything posted.
I will send you a message.
Okay. Thank y'all. Thank y'all. Thank y'all. Thank y'all. Thank y'all. Okay, Cynthia.
Yes.
Okay, so what got you into writing children's books?
Well, I've always been an avid reader. I started out reading my mother's books. And I think once you start reading, it eventually leads to you writing. So I started off doing poetry as a kid, and as an adult I started writing, but I never thought that I would publish a book until a friend of mine came along from high school, and he encouraged me to publish a book that I wrote a couple of years ago. And I was hesitant about it because I didn't know how that worked, or I just didn't see ahead of me. I didn't see what could happen. So I went along with him, and he gave me his publisher's information because he had like about 7 books out. And before I know it, my book was out in like 2 months. So I'm excited.
Wow.
And my books are There's an Elephant in the Room and Pace Learns a Lesson.
Okay.
There's an elephant
in the room,
and who else?
Like Pace Bus, he learns a lesson.
Okay.
And
okay. What age range would your books reach?
That's what I would say 3rd to 5th grade, both.
Okay.
There's an Elephant in the Room is more fun and exciting and full of imagination about an elephant who thinks he's a wolf. And what it's basically saying is it's teaching kids to be themselves at all times.
Oh.
It's really fun. And Pace Learns a Lesson. It tackles the problems that kids have in school. They might have issues with learning. And Pace, he becomes bullied and kind of talked about, and he feels bad because he's having a hard time learning. And in that book, I try to teach repetition, because if you study, and on the front of the book, it's like he has index cards, and that's how I study. If you study, repetition, you will eventually get better.
Now,
isn't that the truth? See, those are awesome. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, that is awesome. I tell you, man, I'm enjoying myself. I'm sorry. I'm just looking at all these books. My kid is 3, so I'm still just trying to find books to add to my collection.
That's great.
So I'm so sorry. Yes. Okay, so Vanessa.
Yes, I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yes.
So what got you into writing children's books?
Well, I've always written. I've written since I was 8 years old. I have never been really a TV watcher. I've written poetry since I was very young, and I've created stories since I was very young. I did not publish my first book until I was an adult, just like Cynthia. And I would say that my background in child care, you know, I used to be a child care provider. I had a group daycare. And I would always write children's books for the kids that I was
you know, caring for, and I would read them my own stories. So basically the intent of me writing books was for, you know, kind of like to take it back to when I was first a parent. I used to read to my children every night. So I wrote because I wanted parents to take it back to the olden days when we used to read to our kids every night before they went to bed. And to give them that diverse book where they can, you know, open up the books and the kids can see children that reflected how they look.
Right.
That was really the intent of me writing my books when I first started.
Right. Wow.
Yeah. And my first book is Harlem's Day Out. And Harlem's Day Out is basically, I'm from Harlem, New York, born and raised.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So, yeah. So Harlem's Day Out was a bit of me keeping a piece of Harlem with me. So now I'm a Pennsylvania resident. You know, that was like me keeping a piece of Harlem with me. I created a book about a little girl named Harlem who actually lives in Harlem. And she's very, you know, she's a very vibrant, friendly little girl, and she has a very close bond with her mom. So the first book talks about a lot about her and her mom's relationship and just shows them hanging out in Harlem and enjoying quality time. And I feel like, you know, you have to put that out there because a lot of parents don't spend quality time with their children.
Gotcha.
That is definitely the truth. So what age group with your book reach?
Well, I have, I believe, 5 books out now, and my books are ranging from, I would say, newborn until maybe 3rd grade, because I believe in reading. I have a 9-month-old grandson, and I've been reading my books to him since he was born.
Okay.
So you said newborn to what grade?
To about 3rd grade, okay.
Yes.
But what about the book I saw you advertising about the PJs? Is that yours?
Oh, well, yes, Living in the PJs. That's one of my adult books. That's one of my, and I would, when I say adult, I don't mean in a bad way. I mean adult meaning not a children's book. It's more of teen and adult books, like for us. Just, you know, a good read. That's my story, my life story of me growing up living in the project.
Okay.
Okay, awesome, 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 awesome. So now this question is for everybody now. So we've kind of introduced everybody and found out what got them into writing children's books. How important do you think it is that children see books with characters that look like them in them?
Well, I'll go first. This is Yaira. It is very important that children read books with characters that look like them. Now, not to say that they shouldn't be reading things that are diverse, because they should know about other cultures, places, and people and things. But when they read books with people that look like them, it's easier for them to relate to those books, and it makes them excited about reading. It makes them excited to want to indulge in the story. It makes them more engaged. And so if that's the way that you use to hook them onto reading, you'll be able to get them to read anything because they've read something that they connect to, that, you know, it's easy for them to digest. And I think that that's very important for, you know, children who are growing up with limited resources, like especially children in urban areas. It's very important for them to get in touch with something that is tangible to them.
Gotcha.
And this
All
is
right.
Vanessa, and,
okay.
and I'm going to say I agree with Yaira. I really believe that children should open up books and see a mirror of them reflected in the books through the characters. Harlem's second book is coming out soon, and it's called Love My Kinky, Love My Curly, Love Me. And it's about a little African-American girl who has natural hair, and she learns how to accept her natural hair, which is not like everybody else's. You know, she has an issue with her hair at first, and she says, like, I want to be like everybody else. How come my hair is not like, you know, this girl or that girl? But her mom shows her the beauty of accepting her own natural hair. So when you're able to open that book and see, you know, a little girl in the book that maybe has hair like you, and, you know, she learns to accept it, then that may show another little girl, you know, in real life, how to accept herself as well.
Okay, cool. Cynthia, Evelyn?
This is Cynthia. I do
okay.
both. I have some African-American books coming out. I also have Caucasian books coming out. My thing is picking up a book, period.
I think kids need to just pick up a book and read. I don't think it matters what color they are, but it is important, too, for them to see reflection of themselves. But I do a mixture of both. I want to do all, actually. I want to do African-American, Caucasian, Mexican. I want to do it all. So
okay.
My thing is I just want them to pick up a book and read.
Gotcha. All right.
Now,
and Evelyn?
Yes.
Yeah.
After,
here. My boys are want to be culturally diverse because there'll be a story about each individual character in the book, and they'll be of a different race. However, I do feel that it's very important that our children do see ourselves in books, because I remember watching Oprah, and they had did the study where they had the little black girl in the classroom or in a room, and she had to pick between two dolls. Do you guys remember that?
Yeah.
The black doll.
Right.
The black doll.
Mm-hmm.
And so most of the black children were more geared for getting the white doll because they thought the white doll was more perfect, more beautiful. And I believe of all the authors, you know, we really want for our children their own that we like. We want them to, you know, not prefer the other, but learn to prefer themselves. A lot of times we get lost in that with so much racism, the things that we are learning about, that they feel like black is not good because they see the negative. But we've got to teach them the positive of being an African American, because there's so many great things about us culturally and as a race. So my first book, Nancy Girl, she's an African American fighter. And her family, of course, is African American, but then in our next book called Adversity, it's a ladybug. She has blue hair, and she's starting her new school as well, but she's going to get bullied because she's different. So we're going to deal with all the other issues that go along with race and being challenged in some other areas. But again, it's very important that a child has confidence in who he or she is in his race or her race, as opposed to, you know, finding their confidence in something.
Right. Hey, Evelyn, I know you went into the closet so that you could have a quiet place, but it might be blocking out your signal because you're kind of coming in and out there. We're getting a lot of feedback off of that.
Okay, can you hear me now?
Yeah,
oh, yeah,
that sounds, yeah, that's much better. That's much better.
Okay,
we
I
just
had
want
to
make sure everybody
speaker.
Hears what
I came out of the closet, I did.
Now, let me pose a question to you ladies. It seems as though most of these books have young girls in them. Does anyone have any sons, and does anyone have any ideas on getting young boys to read?
Vanessa?
Well, this is Cynthia.
Cynthia.
Vanessa and I, we are coming out with a book really, really soon, and one of my stories in the book has a boy in it. So that should be interesting. A little boy may be interested in that.
Okay.
And that book is, yes, that book is definitely coming out soon, within the next week or so.
Mm-hmm.
And that is, I'm
oh,
sorry,
wow.
This is Vanessa speaking. And also, I do have a children's book character, which is a little boy. His name is Monty, and his book will be out in the fall, and that will be for the little boys.
Okay, good.
Wow.
I didn't want us to leave out, you know, the little boys, because they need to read,
no,
too.
No, not at all. I have a grandson. I got to write some boy books for the boys as well, definitely.
Yeah, and in my children's book, Pace Learns a Lesson, he's a little boy.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And let's not forget,
yeah, I've seen your cover.
Bobo the Bookworm is coming out soon, too. That's Cynthia Wilson's book.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Wow.
I'm thinking about my Bobo.
I'm sorry, I'm being a little bit nosy, but I do the compilations for both Cynthia and Vanessa, so I put their books together.
Okay.
Oh, so you guys all know each other.
I know what the lineup looks like. Yeah.
Yes, we do.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, wow, neat. So tell me, you something, okay? How do you guys, and I'm asking this because I actually started my own children's book, and it's kind of like what Vanessa was saying about having her grandson. I have a three-year-old. You might have just heard him unexpectedly come in the room and say, "Here, Mommy, bringing me coffee." But I want something for him to read because I don't know about you guys, but being an educator, I am disturbed by the data that shows that our prisons are built based off of the reading test scores of minority third grade boys.
Wow.
So
wow.
I am in the process of trying. Oh, yeah. You guys didn't know that? That's how prisons are built. Prisons are built when those, and a lot of parents don't understand the importance of the test that our children take. A lot of people just kind of brush off the test, but it's extremely important because that's how our prisons are built. Because the research shows that if a young boy cannot read by the time they are in the third grade, and if they are not on grade level by the time they're in the third grade, the chances of that child, of that young boy, catching up are slim to none. Because the thought is he's going, because with third grade, starting with fourth grade, things pick up. And you get more rigorous mm-hmm. in the curriculum. And so what the research shows is that gap is a gap that cannot be closed, and that those are the children who will eventually drop out of school, become derelicts or whatnot of society, and wind up in prisons. So prisons are built based off of the reading test scores of African-American males or minority males in the third grade. So with that in mind, how do you find illustrators? Because I am desperately trying to get the books, these books out for my son, well, targeted to little boys, using my son quickly, but I can't find an illustrator. So how do you guys locate illustrators?
Well, this is Evelyn, and my brother illustrates my books. He does all my illustrations. He's an excellent artist. I can refer him to you if you want to check out his work or anything.
That would be awesome. Is he reasonable? Because a lot of people who I do know, like an art teacher, he was telling me he would charge like a $100 a page. It was like, huh? What?
Yeah, he is reasonable. So I would say talk to him. Mm-hmm. Of course, I get a better deal because I'm a sister.
Right. Of course.
He's an incredible artist. So, yeah, definitely I will refer him to you.
Okay.
Anyone else who had a suggestion?
Well, this is Vanessa. I use various illustrators because I like a fresh look in each of my books, when I change up my characters. I don't like to see the same, type of art. I like to see differences, so I change up my illustrators. I've used some outsourced. I've used people from Indonesia. I've used people from here in the States. I just go on Facebook, honestly, and I go into, the illustrators groups that they have out there.
Mm-hmm.
There's an illustrator
group?
Yes,
there's
everything on Facebook. I told you that. It's everything on Facebook.
I look into the illustrators groups. I make connections. I make friendships with people. I look at their portfolios and check out their works. And, of course, I check out their prices, and I see what works for my budget.
I'm writing this down. Illustrators group on Facebook. That is awesome. That is really awesome. I tell you, dog man, Apple says they have an app for everything. Facebook has a group for everything.
I believe
so.
Wow, that is something else. Wow. Okay, anybody else? How do you find, huh?
This is Cynthia. You can hear me?
Yeah, I'm getting feedback from someone.
It's not me. I'm in the quietest room ever.
Okay.
Word of mouth is everything. So I listen to what other people say. Like my new artist I got from Miss Cynthia, she referred her to me, and she's super, super awesome. Her name is Emily Hurcock. She's awesome. And my other one, Aviera Smart Film, I found him on Facebook as well. He makes an awesome job as well. It's just that the communication, because he's in Indonesia. But other than that, he's an awesome artist as well. So I just, like she said, go on Facebook. You can find anything that you're looking for.
Wow, that is something else. So yes, we're definitely going to have to do that because I know Jody and I, you know, that is something that's very important to us because we both have small kids. And so Jody and I were both wanting to get into young adult fiction, okay, I mean young adult fiction, as well as children's literature as well. We were both wanting to do that. So that is definitely inspirational to know that we can definitely go to Facebook, to find what we need.
Mm-hmm.
That is awesome. And I like the fact that you guys have gone on Facebook and you have really used your resources, you know, to find people to illustrate for you as well. Awesome. So now I got a question for you. So how can parents get their children into reading? How does it start, in your opinion?
Reading, I would say reading to them every night. Yeah, read to them.
Yeah.
And they emulate what we do. This is Vanessa. They emulate what we do. If we're picking up books and we're reading in front of them often, they'll want to read. If you read to your children often, then they'll want to read. You know, you have to introduce them into the book. Set the example.
Well, you know, this is Evelyn.
And they'll
read
to us.
Awesome. I'm sorry. Go ahead. Oh, okay. What I did was just recently I needed for the last, I read 414 books with the 5-year-old that I was taking care of. And now he has a great passion for reading books and going to the library and also offering them some type of prize for hitting marks if they're reading books. So every time he read 200 books, the library would give him some type of prize and they would reward him with a book as well. So he has 2 books now that he has earned. So even doing that, and again, like they were saying before, letting your child see you read, or, you know, you're reading to them on a regular basis, that's something that's important to stir up the desire to read before they get into school. So just start with them early.
Wow. Okay. So now if your child is a reluctant reader, what tips do you have for parents? Huh?
No, go ahead.
If your child is a reluctant reader, what tips can you offer to the parents?
Make it fun for them.
Yeah.
What? Make it fun for them?
Yeah, you have to make it fun for them, especially if they're finding that the reading is boring. Find out a way to make it come alive for them, as opposed to just, hey, go sit down and I want you to read this book. You know, what can we do to make it more interesting for you? So read it with them. And then do some creative things. Like with my book, Fancy Girl, it's not just a regular read book. It's written in script form. And when I say script form, it's written like a play. So any of the children at any point, you know, depending on their age and their level of reading, we can, in a classroom environment, make it into a play where you got several of the students in the class acting out the different parts. Because if they didn't want to read it at first, now we're making it come alive by creating new characters. They got uniforms on or whatever they're wearing, and they're becoming one with the character. So I would say, you know, bring it to life. You know, put music to it, sing it, dance it, whatever you need to do to make it more creative for that child's process.
Right. Now, I have to say, I like the fact that you said that yours is a play, because I think that's just the neatest thing ever, to get, you know, the little ones up and get them, you know, acting it out. Because, you know, a lot of times small children can be quite the drama queens and kings here.
Yes, they can.
I mean, so serious. And not only that, but I think by having it as a drama, you're giving them a way to role play. You're giving them a way to step outside of themselves, so to speak, and to show them that it can be fun. So I really like the fact that you did it as a play for small children.
Thank you.
Now, do any of you guys go to the library, and or do you hold readings or anything like that for the children around you?
Yes.
Oh, yeah. counselor.
Yes.
And how do those go?
Very well, if it's planned out.
Right.
So how do you go about planning this out, though?
This is Vanessa. I usually contact the library and see, you know, when I can come in and do a reading, you know, when they have special days for the children to have activities done. And I'll come in and I'll read to the children, or I'll do book fairs where I can read at the actual book fairs. And I've also done readings in public schools also, where I contact the schools and make arrangements to come in and read to the classroom. So that also is an avenue to open up, you know, the reading to the children and share our books with the children.
Okay.
It's about making contact with, yeah.
Okay. Now, which one's a teacher? Is that's Cynthia. Cynthia, you're the teacher, right?
No, I'm the regular
nurse. Okay,
I'm
Evelyn's
a preschool
teacher. Okay.
Yeah.
Have you ever had your books picked up by your school?
You know what? Initially, they were going to do it, but I won't knock them, but they did not support me as they said that they would. But I'm starting at a new school on Monday, actually, and they're incorporating the book as part of a reading program for the entire summer for our school-age kids, which was incredible to me because I'm like, I didn't think that the book would go up to that age because these kids are between 10 and 12. But they're going to actually do the play portion of it, like I mentioned. So they're going to be doing that and incorporating it into the reading program, but it will also be in all of the classrooms at the school. And then they have more than 15 different locations. So the book will be, you know, in all the different schools. So I'm really excited about that and opportunity for Fancy Girl's name to get out and what her mission is and what she stands for. So that's going to help a lot of those children really come out of their shells. And I'm excited because I've never worked with school-age kids before in that capacity. So being able to take the book and dissect it and video even a play is going to be great. But the school is going to support the book and my workshop. I'll be doing a workshop for the kids. So that's fabulous, and I'm really excited about that. So.
Now, I have a question for everyone. Do you find it difficult to get school systems to support your work?
Yes.
Yes, because the majority of our books is soft cover. The school system,
yes,
they basically want hard cover books.
Oh, uh-huh. Yeah. Yeah. They want hardcover for practicality's sake, you know,
right.
Because they, you know, because hardcover books hold up better over time, whereas paperback
right.
books, you know, damage easily and have to be replaced more often.
Now, with that being said, this may be a dumb question, but why don't you produce hardcover books?
This is Vanessa. I'm actually in the process of doing hard covers right now for my book.
Okay.
Me too. This is Cynthia.
How do you
so
do
am it? I. It gets pretty expensive, but they do
yes,
have
so.
Programs that will work with you where you can pay on it. But yeah, they will help you make monthly payments, or not even monthly payments, but pay when you can.
This is Evelyn. I plan to do hardcover books eventually. What I found out in my talking, though, is that the charter schools will work with self-published authors, and they will buy your books. They, you know, they have a tremendous budget, millions of dollars that people don't know about for you to come in with your books. So I will get some information to you guys to share with my sisters as well as to how to tap into the charter schools, because you don't necessarily have to go the public school route because they may have a limited and restricted budget, but the charter schools have tons of money that's for other things that they do in the school outside of the necessary mandatory books that they have to have. Then they
right.
have all the other books. So you can, charter schools will be the way to go.
Well, it also
and
depends
also
on the state you're in as well, because I know here in North Carolina, the same amount of money that at least for public funding, that public schools have is what the charter schools have. Now, any additional money the charter schools have here in North Carolina comes from whatever businesses back that school. So, you know, so that may be the other route as well, as far as finding out what, you know, what sources they're getting so you can tap into that as well. But I know for my young adult books, and this might be something for Vanessa, because I know Vanessa was saying that the Living in the PJs book is a book more geared towards adults or young adults. For that, whenever we do books like that, I intend to just use them in my classroom. Start out with like a couple of books here, there in the classroom, and just kind of wait for it to spread like wildfire. And then, you know, I have a very supportive principal who is going to allow me to do a creative writing club. And so that's going to be another way of us getting at least young adult books, you know, out into circulation. So that's some other ideas there for you as well.
Thank you. That's awesome.
No problem. But we're awfully excited. Because, you know, even if you don't get the school system, let's say your grandchild, I know some of you said you have grandchildren, or Yara has a three-year-old. Let's say Yara.
I feel like a little baby compared to them. They all have grandchildren. I have I'm like 23. I have a little baby child.
Hello, I have a three-year-old, too. Now, I'm not in my 20s, but I have a three-year-old, too. So, I mean, you know, it's okay. It's okay.
There is
I don't feel young. I am young, like, compared to them.
It's coming, Yara. It's coming.
Now, somebody was saying my name. Who was calling me? I'm sorry.
This is Vanessa. I was saying there's other avenues to get your book out. Like, Cynthia and I have our books out in a Chicago bookstore. I have my books in a couple of daycare centers. You know, I have a friend that works for the foster care system in New York, and she was able to get my books into a couple of the foster care agencies out there in New York. So there's other avenues. It's just that we have to be more persistent in, you know, searching for those avenues.
Right.
You have to be more patient, because a lot of times what happens, this is what I found. There's a couple of bookstores. I live in North New Jersey. There's a couple of bookstores here. But what happens is, like, one of the stores I went into, like, I also write adult fiction as well, right? Urban fiction, crime fiction, Islamic fiction, any genre you can name, I basically write in it. And I went to one of the stores to get my book in the store. And I'm thinking, like, I'm going there personally. Like, the person's getting to personally meet me, you know, talk with me or whatever. And I'm thinking it's going to be a good perspective. But basically what the person told me was that they only take in books that's published by companies, by publishing companies, and not self-published authors. And I was like, that's really crazy, because there's a lot of untapped potential untapped talent out here, because people don't want to accept independent authors, you know, and it's becoming a widespread thing of independent authors. People are wising up to publishing, because self-publishing is a lot easier to deal with than publishing through a publishing company, and they're missing out on a lot of talent because they don't want to support independent authors.
Right.
That is a problem with some places.
I think you should also contact, there is a actual independent bookstore in Chesapeake, ran by Benita Moon.
Yeah, I know Benita.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, you need to, yes. She actually runs an independent bookstore for all authors. So that's an avenue, too. And there are a few others, but I would definitely talk to her. She may know of other folks who, you know, who do that as well. But you're right. It is difficult to get an independent book in certain bookstores. And I guess the reason behind that is because it's so easy to publish a book nowadays, and there's no vetting system. So there's a lot of bad books floating around, you know.
Well, it
makes it harder.
I mean, I don't mind them being selective. It's the thing of, like, you this was my own experience. Like, she wasn't even willing to get, like, I was like, I will give you a free copy of my book so that you can read it, blah, 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 blah. And she just was like, oh, we don't support independent authors. And I said, that's all. Like, the opportunity wasn't even, like, oh, like, it was a weird atmosphere, you know. But it is what it is, and that's not going to deter anybody for giving up. If anything, I'm going to start my own bookstore, and then I'll have all the independent authors I want to have. You know?
There you
go.
That's definitely the mentality you have to take. I think that's, when I thought of Fania, I think that's what she said. She was trying to get her book in bookstores, and she kept getting turned down, so she said she just came up with her own bookstore.
Right.
But it's just a way for you to keep on pushing. I mean, you're going to get no's. You know this. You know, as an author, you're going to get no's and no's and no's, and eventually you'll get
your yes. It's a numbers game.
You have to keep on going, you know. Yeah, it's just a numbers game.
I know for Jody and I, one way that we have been really trying to get our books out is that we did Fanita. We used Fanita, so she's been a wonderful help there. We also did the Emoja Festival with Fanita. In Virginia, we were there for Memorial Day weekend, and we're doing Harlem. We're going to Harlem next month for the Harlem Book Fair. So we're going to be there as well. So it's all about hustling. And if you ever see Jody hustle a book, wow, okay? That's all I can say. I had to learn how to step up my game so I could match my partner here because he hustles a book to the point where, you know, they call him the book bully. And so, which is a good thing. No, but it's not a bad thing. I mean, that's actually a compliment because Jody moves product. He moves the product. So I think I think for us as females, it's a thing of us being shy or us being taught not to. Well, you know, a lot of times females are taught not to be quite so over the top, quite so in your face or whatnot. And so, but with this, in this particular industry, because you are trying to stand out, you have to get over that. And I'm slowly coming out of my shell. Oh, really? Okay. Well, I'm slowly coming out of my shell because, you know, Jody just kind of kicked me out of it. So, but like I said, it's a good thing.
Although I won't have a table, I will be there, hopefully. I don't know. It's the last day of Ramadan that day, but I'm trying to be there, so...
And I'll be on it.
Well,
we hope
to see you there.
Yes.
Most definitely.
Yes, we are we're going to be on Publisher's Row, so we're going to be there. So I'm nervous. I'm nervous because, you know, all the videos are showing, you know, the people hustling, you know, hey, you know, come look at my book. Hey, you know, da, 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 da. And like you were saying, I'm just not that type of person. So I'm, like, terrified because I'm like, oh, my God, I got to talk again. So I definitely understand, you know, trying to get your books into the schools and, you know, trying to get them into the bookstores because you guys have a lot more guts and moxie than I have. Like I said, I'm getting there. I'm just not all the way there where you guys are yet. So I'm coming.
I guess that's why I was curious about how you ladies were able to, you know, get your books out there and sell your book because you're talking about children's books, so it's a little bit different. So the marketing is a little bit different. Like for us, since we write adult books, it's easy for me to sell paperbacks because you're just talking. But for children's books, I was wondering, because I do want to eventually tap that market, how do you go about getting your books out there?
Well, this is Vanessa, and I'm going to tell you this. Everybody either has kids, knows kids, you know, or knows somebody who has a kid. So, you know, you got to look at women. We're impulse shoppers. If you have the product out here for kids, I don't see anybody turn away from my table. Normally, people come by and they pick up a book. If it's not for their children, it's for a niece or a nephew, a grandchild, a neighbor's kid. You know, people don't leave my table without a book.
Okay.
Awesome.
I definitely see that because, like Tanisha said, we were at the Emoja, and there were authors there who had children's books. And actually, I would point them to those people's tables. You know, it would. Because a lot of people have their kids, you know, and they will buy books. But
you're not going to just you have to speak up also. It's not going to just sell itself, even though, it, you know, they will sell itself if people come by your table. But you have to speak up. If you're not assertive and you're not saying, you know, telling people what the book is about or why they should buy it for their kids, what makes that book stand out from any other book, you know, then, you know, you're not going to get people to buy them. Because our books, we're charging X amount of money for, where maybe they can find a book for, like, maybe $2.99 or $3.99.
Right.
And you have to show them why they should pay this amount of money over a book that's going to cost them $2.99.
And then the thing that me and Vanessa do is we brand our products. Like, Vanessa has necklaces and shirts and tutus and all these things that go along with her book. And I do the same thing. Like, we find a product that match whatever we're talking about in the book, and that attracts people to what you're selling. Like, when you have something extra other than just books, and they come over, they go, oh, look at this. This little necklace, oh, the book matches it. I want both. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, yeah. Oh, I definitely know about branding.
Right. Like, Evelyn, you have,
Vanessa,
I saw
has a shoe. Oh, I'm sorry.
Oh, I was just saying, like, Evelyn, I saw you had, like, the little bugs in front of your book.
Mm-hmm.
You know, kind of like the go along with Fancy Girl.
Yeah, but there's also a jewelry line. There's a tote bag line. There's also, I mean, we just do a whole plethora of different things.
Oh,
and usually I take all of that with me when I go to vending events, and I try to gear my events towards children only. And not so much the adults, because they like purses and jewelry and all this stuff, but things that are more focused on the children. And so we do that. I have it created in Indiana. And I believe Cynthia and Vanessa may have used the Polly Claymaker that I've used to, you know, create a lot of my jewelry and stuff.
Yes.
And the T-shirts, those are great. So what I do is use my granddaughter to model. So I have her in a whole outfit. She'll have on some matching leggings with Fancy Girl down the leg, and, you know, and then her T-shirt and a hat and the earrings and the necklace and a bracelet or something. And, you know, we just having fun taking pictures. And people will come over, and they're like, oh, wow, what is that? And then that starts the whole conversation. And then, of course, I pull the book out right away. And, you know, Fancy Girl is loosely based on my granddaughter. So, you know, she can kind of share in that experience as well. So, you know, and we're working on her being a published author by August. So, you know, just opening doors and things like that. But definitely vending opportunities. I live there to, you know, get my book out.
Okay.
Wow. Now, Vanessa just sent me some pictures of different products. These are amazing. Good gracious, these are amazing.
Mm-hmm.
You've got mugs. I see your bags here with Kennedy on them. These are some. I'm going to post these in our group if you don't mind. I'm just going to kind of put all these pictures, because I figure the more we post, the more, you know, anything you guys want us to use to promote you, please send that to me. That's why I gave you guys our email address. Send us whatever you have so we can put those up there, and we can help to, you know, get the word out about you, because it is summer vacation, and these children are home from school, and you do know that these kids are going to be driving their parents crazy. So if they can have your book, your bag to tote around the house, your doll to play with in the house, you know, your cup, your little mug to drink their chocolate milk or whatever they're drinking from in the house, that's going to be awesome as far as getting your name out there and helping to make you a household name for people with small children. So anything you have that you want us to promote, please send that to us so that we can get that out there for you.
I just wanted to mention that this Saturday, June 20th, Vanessa Santiago German and Isaiah Kalima will be at the Newark Public Library at the first annual book fair. That's 5 Washington Street, Newark, New Jersey. We'll be there on Saturday from 10 to 5.
Wow,
yes,
we will definitely
Yara
post that in the group,
Vanessa,
as well.
Yeah. Yes. Wait a second. So I just added Vanessa to the group so that I can broadcast that. So if you'll send me that information, Yara, then I can post that in our group. And like I said, that will also generate some buzz for you guys, because I'm going to post exactly what you say, in the group, and I'm going to post it on our fan page as well. Like I said, Jody and I really believe in, you know, trying to help others to get out there as well, because we do know that it's not easy. Not easy.
It's not.
So anything we can do to help is what we want to do. So definitely
great.
Get us all your information, because you'll see it come flashing up on our fan page, and you'll see us put it up in the group. So like I said, anything we can do is going to be, you know, our pleasure.
Thank you so much.
No problem. But now it is 10:30, and so we are going to go ahead and we're going to wrap this up. It has been wonderful, wonderful, wonderful. Please use our email that we gave to you, WTF. And if you need me to send it to you again, just let me know. But it's WTF.Kenitra.Jody@gmail.com. And please be sure that you get to us. We want links. If you have links, you know, pictures of your books, anything that you have that you want us to put out there. Because, see, the wonderful thing about what you guys are doing is we can keep this promotion going all summer long as part of our summer reading booth and part of our summer reading campaign. So we can always post these things throughout the summer for you guys because, like I said, these are our children. We don't want our children to grow up. We don't to grow up and to become a statistic. So anything that we can do to help you get those books out there, we are going to do. So please send us your information. Okay? Did you have any parting words, Jody?
Thanks to all of the authors that participated today. Y'all go out and support them. We will have every book, every author up in the group and on the fan page, hopefully with links. I'm not sure if y'all have your books on Amazon, but if y'all do, we'll definitely have that link up. So just go out and support. Have fun. Read to your kids. Thank you, y'all. Take us out, KJ.
All right. We will see everybody next Wednesday on our regular show at 9 o'clock. See you guys.
Hit it. Bye. Yeah.